Happy day after St. Patrick's Day.
Happy day after St. Patrick's Day. Good morning.
See, I'm a little...
It's a good morning, right, Joe?
Good morning. It's a very good morning. I'm a little disappointed in Pat Dalpiaz. Because you seem a little too fresh for me for an official Irish person. You should be...
Yeah.
You should not be as cognizant and...
You're right. I didn't get a chance to celebrate yesterday the way I typically do.
Is it because Jimmy, the Italian, wasn't here to lead the way?
Basically, yeah.
There is Uber. I took an Uber home last night.
You know, I did think about that. I thought about that as an option. I said I always have that as an option.
See, I always pictured you and your psycho sisters as hardcore, big time.
But not
get after it, St. Patrick's Day people.
Not always by myself.
Why didn't you get a hold of us?
Well, who knew?
Jimmy would have got a hold of us.
Yes, he's better at that stuff than I am.
He puts himself out there.
That's why we make a good pair, I guess.
It's true, the yin and the yang. We are here, Joe Sanfilippo, Captain Joseph Sanfilippo is here. He used to be a fisherman.
Uh-huh.
Now, as one of the many benefits that Sherry DiLorenzo and Jim Davis. Jesus, I'm thinking of the lobsterman. Jim Davis have brought to our fair city. He is the captain of Beaufort Princess.
Oh.
Or one of the captains.
I'm actually the engineer on board.
Engineer, I'm sorry. Yes. But, but that's good. That supports you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a good job.
That's my lady. She's my lady.
Yeah.
I'm in love with that boat. I really am. My girlfriend has a hard time with it because she really is my first love. I brought her up from Florida and I've been there ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's a good, I mean, it supports you and your family.
It does. And it, and they treat me right and it's a beautiful place. It's a great place to work. It's very interesting. I'm extremely lucky to be able to do what I've done my whole life.
Be on the water.
Nice?
Yes. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. I have a lot of fun doing it, and I take a lot of pride in it. The boat's
beautiful. Where is she right now?
She's at the dock.
She
sits at the dock right now. Captain John Randazzo is probably down there right now, just keeping her nice and clean and tidy.
It's funny. Joe's a man now, right? But Joe was, when I was a kid working on the docks, Joe was an even younger kid working on the back of his father's fishing boat on the dragger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on the Enzo Rosa.
On the Enzo Rosa, yeah.
Jeez. And, that's a long, long time ago. And I still, in my mind, Joe is still a youngster, but he's a full-blown. How old are you now, Joe?
I'm 46.
He's 46 years old. Yeah, 46. But like, when he was, how old were you when you were fishing?
I was 11 years old when I first started.
I'm
the youngest of five boys.
That's a lot of years on the water.
So yeah, I spent 27 years commercial fishing.
Youngest of five boys, wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. My brother Dom
started on the Teresa R, which actually unloaded fish at this dock with Joe's father and his grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle Charlie too.
Yeah, and your uncle Charlie.
Yeah.
And we, my brother Don was one of the youngest skippers to ever sail out of this port.
Oh yeah.
He was 16 years old and he was captaining a 96 foot stern side trawler.
Oh.
The Teresa R.
Eastern Rig.
Where a lot of people got their start on that boat with my brother.
Yeah.
A lot of young men, sailed with my brother Don. It was amazing. He taught me a lot of what I know. You know, I was lucky enough to be the youngest of five. So I learned a lot
from all their mistakes,
right?
Yeah.
That's right. But you got an interesting, really interesting program, and it's been in the works. It didn't just come about overnight from what you were telling me. This is something you've been kind of worked on for a long time. And it's going to be... And what we're going to introduce today is really a piece of a much bigger picture, an introduction to basic net mending class at, and you're going to do it at the new Wheelhouse co-work space that we did our podcast from.
That tempted me because net mending comes up in my family history research here and there.
You know, it was funny. I was down talking to Daniel Marino down at Virgilio's, local bakery, and she said the same. She said, my fondest memories of my grandfather were watching him sit in the living room, mending on his mending chair, and mending nets.
Yeah.
And she was very interesting also, very interested in it also.
So that's striking a nerve, then. That's great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's one small piece of a very big project I've worked on for the past 20 years. It's you know, the basic knowledge of being a commercial fisherman don't come overnight. And you can't really put it on paper. I've tried the best I can. I've got a lot of different modules to my whole project that I decided to pull one of the most interesting pieces out of it that can relate to not only just, you know, commercial fishermen, but to artisans alike.
Oh yeah.
You know, a lot of it's a craft that can be used in many, many different ways.
Mm. But it's gonna be indoors at the wheelhouse on which is in Ken Hecht's building. So it's at that building where we did the podcast from, Nate Cahill's space, and it's not just net mending though. You're gonna talk about a bunch of different stuff, right?
Well, I think that this will focus mostly on, you know, the basic net mending, the methodology of fishing,
mm-hmm.
the terminology. And there's going to be a lot of hands-on, you know, work with nets,
yeah.
and, you know, nets and knots, ropes and twine.
That the folder that you brought in.
Yes, sir.
What is that that folder? So Pat, you had the booklet in your hands. Joe,
yeah.
do you print those out for the people?
I do. There's going to be a there'll be a class of 25, so each person will get a booklet.
And they walk away. So it's $40 for the class, and they're actually going to walk away with some stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm calling it a souvenir bag. They'll be able to walk away with class with
a net
class.
Bag, no
yes,
doubt.
Right? They'll be able to walk away with a piece of net, a mending needle, some twine on the needle, and they'll be able to do it. You know, take it home with them and be able to work on it at home. This is the basic net mending. You'll be taught how to mend a hole, and there's a lot more to it. So there'll be more classes, and there'll be classes teaching, you know, follow up. There's a lot of interest within the fishing community itself on how to build nets and you know, try to make that work.
So the interesting thing to me is, because you came by here yesterday, we had a conversation, and the interesting thing to me is, and we just talked about how old we are, you know, 25 years ago, it was before the huge hyper consolidation in the fishing industry, where there was still quite a, still a lot of activity, and there were still some captains that weren't 60 years old. You know, most of the captains right now are
older.
You know, if you, I'm going to guess and say that 80 to 90% of the fishing permit holders, commercial fishing permit holders, are 55 years or older. Would you agree with that, Joe?
There is no doubt, and that's actually a true statement.
And that might even be on the low side.
That is definitely on the low side.
Right?
Yes.
So, and the way that the fishing industry is now, they made these permits worth, they can sell the permits. And the quota that's within the permits. So it's almost impossible for a young person to get into the fishing industry anymore, because the permits are so valuable now. And on top of that, there are like oil companies and that are backing these other kind of, and not just oil, some conservation companies. Actually, some of these conservation companies are working in concert with oil companies, because oil companies want to drill kind of offshore. The conservation companies actually don't want fishermen
fishing
in the waters. So they kind of like, there's this huge amount of this green money floating around buying these permits for a huge amount of money, and these kids can't
Right, can't buy in.
So that's why.
So
this,
is there a limited number of these permits, or
there is a limited? There is a limited number now. There used to be. You would just back in the day, if you wanted to go fishing, you got a license to go fishing.
Yeah,
there was no entry.
Before 1978, there was.
Oh, so it's that recent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely a change in 78 where it changed a lot of things for a lot of people.
And then, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, then it became,
right,
you know, really off the wall. You know,
insane. Well, when it came to the point where the license was worth more than the actual work platform was what it
was. That was the tipping point.
That was definitely the tipping point. The licenses were worth $1 million and the boat was worth $300,000 or $400,000. Mm-hmm. And there was a point where they were actually, you know, boats were a dime a dozen because they were consolidating the licenses all into one. One boat was working 3, 4, 5 licenses.
Oh.
Because they only could catch so much fish per permit.
Right, right.
So that they would consolidate. So all these boats. So these, and on top of that, when you have if you get a guy that's 55 years old or 60 years old, and he has an opportunity to get $1 million for a permit that he didn't even pay for.
That's right.
And it's his, I mean, that's his, I mean, I don't have a pension like that, right? You know what I mean? Most people don't have a pension that, you know, that you can get out for $1 million and then sell your boat on top of it and be done. So that's why this, our in Gloucester, which had this, you know, strong, and still has a strong fishing history.
Heritage. Yes.
It was absolutely
something that we're losing.
So that's the overarching reason for your.
So here's the thing. So now, because of all of this, there's so few boats that there's so few young kids that there's any hope for them to be a fisherman. Like in this sense, you could be a lobsterman still,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But like to afford a boat to go fishing, this art of mending a net, these captains, that the few that are left, the guys that are down there mending the nets are, they've been retired for like 20 years, and they go down there because they're the only ones that still know how to mend the nets.
Is the net mending very different from it was 100 years ago?
Nothing's changed.
That's what I thought. Even though the materials have changed for the net.
The materials obviously have changed because of, you know, it was hemp in the beginning. And it's, you know, it's evolved into a polymer now. And it's a lot different. I think the materials have made it, you know, it's a longer lasting material. It's not as heavy. It's, unfortunately, it's definitely not biodegradable.
Is there a movement afoot to make them biodegradable or to?
I don't think that's been discussed, and I don't really.
There's so few nets now.
Yeah, there are so
they don't
few
they don't lose the nets like that.
Yeah.
They're not cutting the nets and throwing it overboard like they may have used to. You know?
That's right, and not only that, I think that the evolution of the electronics that we use nowadays are making it very. Very easy to see what's on the bottom, as opposed to when I started.
Oh,
right. Oh. Yeah. That makes sense.
They used to. We used just a sounding machine.
Right.
That was, you know, it just sends out an image to the bottom, a sound wave to the bottom, bounces back up to the boat, and just puts a blurb on the screen.
You don't know if you're going over jagged rocks,
right. or
you know,
a big pile of fish,
yeah.
or anything like
and
that.
And so you would lose or damage in that. And
you
then,
could very well do that, and that's what happens. You tow over a piece of hard bottom, it tears your net, you pull the net back, and the net's almost unusable. You put it into, you bring it back on deck, and you unroll it, and you unfurl it, and you sit and you fix it for 10 or 15 hours in the freezing cold.
Wow.
And then you set it back out and it happens again. But I've spent many, many of nights in 20 or 30 knot gales fishing the net, fixing the net that I've just torn to pieces, you know.
So, and you don't have that doesn't happen as much anymore because of the of the radar and stuff like that.
Well, yes, it's a lot easier. I think a lot of us older captains have done the groundwork for the younger people that are coming into it that don't need to worry about the hard bottom, or where the bottom starts to get hard, the bottom starts to get soft, wrecks, things are that are in the way, just any particular thing that could rip the net. It's not the net is, you know, you're towing it behind a very heavy momentum full boat, which will, you know, full of fish and weight. They tear very easily. Okay. You'll be surprised.
They also have now. There's other ways that they build nets with things called rollers and rock hoppers and stuff that allow them to fish in air. They have big like rubber discs on the nets that roll along like this.
Yeah, like tires.
Like tires. So it kind of like rolls. So the net will go like right along, and there may be up to a degree of a certain size rock that thing will hit and kind of like bump up over instead of just
jacking,
you know, like one sharp like thing like this, just tear,
slice
and dice. Yeah.
Slices it. Yeah.
So anyway, the point is, there because there's so little of these young fishermen coming up that have any of this type of knowledge, this is really a cool thing that Joe is doing, providing this.
Yeah, it is.
This class.
So it's kind of a series.
This is one very little part of an overall picture. It started off to me as almost a vocational class. I have many, many modules to this particular thing. I'm holding it in my hand. I do basic net mending, basic marine electronics, vessel handling, fishing history of Gloucester, and the new rules and regulations as they are imposed nowadays.
And you're calling it extreme Gloucester fishing?
I'm calling it extreme Gloucester fishing because at the time
I thought that would attract younger people. Maybe that's why.
I called it extreme Gloucester fishing before, you know, before the deadliest catch, before all that stuff, because it was that extreme.
Yeah.
And when I was young, I used to compare fishing on George's Banks and big heavy weather, like climbing Mount Everest.
Yeah.
It was that extreme. There were that many people that were lost at sea. Doing what we do, you know. So it was an extreme thing to me, and
that's interesting how it's evolved. Then,
yeah,
it still fits.
Yeah, it still fits. There's no doubt about it. It wasn't a very safe occupation. Like I said, fortunately, I was born into it, so I never really seen the hazards. Although I spent many a night in some nasty, real nasty weather. I not only fished out of Gloucester, I've also been on boats that have gone to way off of Newfoundland sword fishing, all the way from the points of, you know, way up north, 50 degrees north, all the way down to, Puerto Rico and Barbados. I fished out of all them areas back and forth, for a long time. So there was a lot of stuff I seen, a lot of weather, and that's why extreme Gloucester fishing got its name that way.
I like it.
Is 50 degrees north, is that up by where harp seals breed?
I believe so, yes, yeah. The harp seals. Sable Island, off of Sable Island, the famed Andrea Gale.
Okay.
I was actually fishing in that era when the Andrea Gale got lost. I think I did a couple trips.
So, Joe, what do people have to do to sign up for the class?
Well,
I have a link to the post.
Yes. A link to the Wheelhouse. They can link to Wheelhouse, and it's pretty self-explanatory. It's very easy. Nate Cahill has helped quite a bit. I have to give him kudos for his site and what he's done down there. The place is awesome.
It is awesome, isn't it?
I really, when I walked in there, it was like I felt right at home.
That is
great.
Yeah, yeah, and it was perfect for what I want to do. I'm not looking to make a big class. I want everybody to feel like it's a personal experience.
And you're going to teach the classes right there.
Yeah.
I'm on the website right now.
Right.
Wheelhousecowork.com. And if you scroll down, you have Joe's events are right on the front page of the website. You have to scroll down towards the bottom.
Okay.
Introduction to Basic Net Mending, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. And you could sign up right there. Also, April 4th, 6:30 p.m. I'll put a link right.
I have
the link in the show notes. I'll have a link to go directly to this to the class. so that people can find it even more easily.
Wow, only $40? That's super reasonable.
Yes, I when I started this class, it was never about the money. Mm-hmm. When I started this whole thing, to me, it was very, it's a part of my heritage that's being lost. And yeah. I really, really feel strongly about introducing this to to numerous and different types of people.
And the way to do that is to share the skills.
Right.
Yes.
I have an extremely large amount of knowledge of this industry and what we're doing that is going to be lost if I don't share it. Hmm. And my son, who's 14, James is amazing. And he came to me one day and said, "Dad, I want to learn how to commercial fish." And I'm fortunate enough to have brothers that are still in the business, the Captain Dominic, my brother Gus, and my brother Nino, both extremely good fishermen. They do very well. It's an 80-foot stern trawler.
It's the one that's got the black.
Yeah,
all they're black with a white trim. Yeah.
No, it's red.
Red.
It's red. Okay. It's a big red boat.
It's the red one.
Yes, and it docks down Felicia Royal, okay. Who John Nicastro and Paul, who is my son's godfather. Felicia Royal was once referred to as San Filippo country. because me and my brothers, my five brothers, were fishing out of Felicia Royal. The founder of Felicia Royal, Sam Nicastro, was actually my mentor. I sat with that man, he was incredible, and would tell me stories of his boat, the Felicia, and loading it full of redfish. He was amazing, an amazing man. He was genuinely the smartest man I ever knew.
He's my grandfather's best friend.
Yeah.
They fished side by the Felicia was my sister boat to the Benjamin C. The boat that took all those photos.
They were both built in Essex. As a matter of fact, I did something I went to something that Justin Dimitri put on the other day at the Essex Shipbuilding Museum,
oh, yeah.
Which was so interesting. I was intrigued, and at the very end, they had a picture of the Felicia, and it made me smile because I said, the guy was my mentor. He was, he was so knowledgeable.
Ron Gilson mentions
the Felicia
and the Benjamin C. and their relationship.
So what happened to those two boats? Do you know?
I don't know exactly what happened to them. Sam got into the oil business and started the Felicia Oil Company. Mm-hmm. And he worked every day. He used to say to me, "What are you doing here, kid? It's 4:30 in the morning." He's like, you're 11, 12 years old. Don't you have anything better to do?" And to be honest with you, I didn't. I would wake up early in the morning, and my older brothers at that age were all fishing. And my mom would say, "Get out of here, you're driving me nuts." Mm-hmm. And that's where I'd end up. I'd end up down the docks, and I'd end up sweeping the dock with him and chatting for 3 hours before anybody showed up. So he was a great man, a great inspiration, and I miss him dearly. I think and talk about him every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good guy. Those guys are the salt of the earth.
Those
guys.
Your grandfather's best friend.
Yeah, they were very, very tight. They went fishing, so they would go. I mean, the way they fished was a long ways off.
Yes.
And they would kind of go together in case they needed
to. There was a time where the ocean warmed, like it is now, not quite as drastically, but the codfish disappeared.
So they had to go way
so
out.
So they needed to go out far. They needed to go 1,500 miles offshore, 1,200 miles offshore to the Grand Banks. And that's where they fished, and that's where
they were like the first ones to go fish out there.
Yes, they really were.
Ron Gilson talks about these guys as the Highlanders, and you know how I always talk about Ron. Ron talks about the way it was, not like Joe Garland talks about Fantasyland.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he just talks about it like romantically. Mm-hmm. Ron Gilson really talks about like.
When an incredible
amount of fish was landed in this city. Guys were bringing in, like I have those clips over there. Actually, I don't know if they're on this Frankie's desk over there anymore, but the newspaper clippings from the Gloucester Daily Times, you'll see the Benjamin C. hailed for 265,000 pounds of haddock, and the Felicia hailed for 254,000 pounds of haddock.
Yes.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Incredible.
And they landed a lot of fish.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Gloucester.
Like
Gloucester
now,
was
they don't handle that amount of fish.
The whole
for a week. And the whole, you know what I mean?
And the whole boats combined. The whole industry.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we, Gloucester fed the world.
So it literally
fed the world.
So
we
after
processed
World War II, right?
The most
especially.
Fish
so,
on the East Coast.
So what years was this, the Benjamin Z and the Felicia?
It was like 53, 54.
Yeah,
like
54, 55.
Yeah.
My dad came to this country in 56, and I believe they had been fishing for at least 15 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. There was also another boat called the Bonaventure that was part of that. The Novello family, which is, they were into it, and they really did well also. They had gear shops, they had a lot. These guys were great fishermen also.
The Brancleones came
the
Brancleones, a little after that.
Yep. The Brancleones, mm-hmm. another amazing fishing family
yeah.
in town.
Yeah,
there's a lot of us. There's a lot of fishing done out of the city that brought a sense of camaraderie and pride that we are kind of losing today, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing in this type of...
Yeah.
This is
for anybody that wants to do it. I mean,
right.
It's not just for young men. There's anybody could, this would be an interesting class for anyone to take.
And
$40 is nothing.
I know.
Yeah,
I,
and I've actually
I,
geared
I,
it.
I actually like to take
I've,
it.
I've geared it towards people and anybody that could walk in off the street that could actually, you know, read and write and come in, sit, and learn how to do a typical hole. I've put it on paper. First we'll be doing the paper part of it, and then we'll be doing the actual
hands-on
demonstration. I also have my co-captain, John Randazza, who was an incredible fisherman. He was also a dragger, owned the Sacred Heart, and he'll be my helper. I'll be the teacher, and he'll be my co-teacher, if that's what you want to call him. I also have, you know, people that'll be there helping to hang the nets, because we'll be working, everybody will work on their own individual piece, and they'll also be able to bring that home with them.
There you go. All right, again, I put the link in the show notes on the podcast, so you can sign up there. I'm sure it's going to be a great class. Thanks for coming in, Joe.
Yeah, that's
you're welcome.
Great.
Thank you guys for your time.
Very thoroughly
great.
Done.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, that was a great segment.
What an opportunity.
Mm-hmm. No, we don't talk to enough. You know, it's funny. We're here at the dock, and we don't talk to enough
fishermen.
No, former fishermen.
We'll have to have more on.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
You often ask them, and they often, when I come in and somebody's here, and you might ask them if they want to stay and chat, and most of the time they don't.
They decline.
They're a little,
you know what it is? Is
reticent.
So here's the thing. If they're already in the room and it started, they enjoy it and everything. But like, there's this kind of thing, like if a fisherman is in the paper or something, everybody's kind of like, oh, you're just trying to be in, you're trying to be in the
oh,
paper. You're trying to get publicity for yourself. You know, it's almost like then you have to listen to the shit from guys,
right.
You know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah.
And they get,
that's
they
a
kind
shame.
Of feel that way, you know, so it's just like, you know, whatever. St. Patrick's Day was yesterday. Pat is here. you missed the introduction where I scolded her for being way too bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. She disappointed me as an Irish person who wears her Irishness on her sleeve that she's not completely hungover this morning. It's so disappointing to me.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I was by myself, so... You know, although I do like to celebrate, generally doing it by myself is not the way I prefer to do it.
in a
bottle of Jameson.
Well, we had a funny experience last night because, like, we both worked like crazy all day, and so we didn't even remember that it was St. Patrick's Day. And then I went to the Novena, and so, like, we were hungry at 9 o'clock, so we go to the Franklin. All of Main Street was completely dead. And I asked Grace at the Franklin, she said, yeah, everybody had been, like, drinking all day. They had a huge rush at 5 o'clock. You know what I mean? Like, people were, like, starving
I talked to Mark Ring, and he said that, so we had started early at the Crow's Nest.
Yeah.
Chris and I went to Zeke's for breakfast. Went to the Crow's Nest right from there at 11:30, and we got after it. We just kept calling, people just kept coming and piling into it. We have our little corner there. Mm-hmm. And Pixie Harrington and Marianne Chatford were guest bartenders.
Oh, so okay.
When they were on, it's always a show. And and so we went from there. So our original plan was to go from there to the top side to the rum line. Because tradition for me is the rum line for St. Patrick's Day. For I know for a lot of people it is. But we're having so much fun at the Crow's Nest. And then we're really having a ton of fun at Topside. All I could think of was like, we're going to go. At this point, it was like 5:36, and I was already quite marinated.
Don't worry you now.
So I'm like, we're going to go to the rum line. It's going to be packed. And the band is the best band. I know it'll still be a good time, but I was just like, we're having a great time at Topside. It wasn't, we had the space to ourselves. We're whooping it up. And I'm like, if we go there, I'm like, I think the smart move for me here is to call. I left my truck here at the dock.
Oh, okay.
And were you taking Ubers?
I took Uber. Uber. So Ubered at home. I was in bed by 6:30 because I had to be at the dock by 4 this morning.
Yeah.
So, and we...
Oh, that's
funny. I'll tell you, it was... I say this every year. Like, I am very jealous of the Irish on St. Patrick's Day.
It's just a holiday devoted to.
I feel like the Irish feel that. I feel like the Irish feel about that way about, you know, for Fiesta.
That's funny because I think it's seriously underwhelming here in a lot of ways.
You know, you just didn't go to the right places.
That's true. You're right about that.
But it's
a big celebration where you are.
I mean, there's a parade and they make a big deal out of it.
Yeah. No, it's
not necessarily.
If you were in Boston, huge in Boston.
Right.
I used to go in Boston, but I stopped going because
it's just crazy.
I felt like there was an element of danger. Like the last couple of years I went
in
Southie, you know, the last time I went into Southie for St. Patrick's Day. I was walking down the street, and it wasn't just one or two streets, but I saw, like, there was some young thugs just, like, I saw a couple of people just randomly, like, sucker punching dudes or going up to them and just, like, starting fights, and I was just like, eh.
Well, I saw a guy stabbed at Bova Bakery right on the street corner with a big crowd around.
Bova Bakery?
You know,
in the North End. That's not in the South End.
No, in the North End. And then I was talking to Tom last night about, he was telling me about when he played with Prince at the Metro, and they thought it was going to be like, because it was like so much racial tension in Boston at the time, and he thought it was going to be the worst show, the scariest show. Prince was scared, they were scared.
Oh, really?
But it was the most, like, he said it was one of the best shows they ever played because it was, the whole crowd was like so racially diverse.
Cool.
We were just talking about this last night, and it was like one of the best shows they ever did.
I brought Madeline into the Celtics game the day before, Saturday. I mean, this is like a perfect weekend for if you love to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Because St. Patrick's Day falls on Sunday, which gives you an excuse to celebrate it on Saturday.
The weather was wonderful. There weren't any weather issues.
No.
It was balmy. It was practically balmy out.
So I took Madeline into the Celtics game.
And they won, didn't they?
They won, but we took a little... like a bicycle, what do you call it? It's not like a rickshaw, but it's like a guy on a bike that it has a cart behind him.
I don't know what that's called.
Pulled us right to the, we parked by Faneuil Hall, and he rode the bike to TD Garden. But like, so we rode past like the Bell in Hand, patios, all those bars like down, in that area. And get going there, it wasn't crazy. After the game got out at 3:30 and the streets were mobbed and getting. I was like, I would not. I'm like, I'm glad that I am out of my 20s and out of, because I would be here. You know, if I was in my 20s, I would have been at one of those bars for St. Patrick, for that Saturday night. And I could tell it was going to be an absolute shit show.
So people were starting on Saturday. Continuing through.
It was wild in that area. Because we had to go by those bars on the way back, And I mean, people were, they were having a good time. And I didn't see any fights, but this is 3:30 and there was a long way to go. You know, a long way
to go. That's pretty early in the day.
Yeah, yeah, a long way to go. Mayor Safathia is having a murder mystery. Let's see, it's at
Cape Ann Brewing
this Saturday, March 23rd from 6 to 9, and you said it's sold out.
According to Eventbrite, where the tickets are available, it says sold out. I'm glad I have mine.
That's great.
Ralph got a table, so we're all going. So, and I guess you have to, you're dressing up as a roaring 20s.
We're dressing up, yeah. Aww. Jim and I are dressing up.
So I'm going to go to Bananas. Kate and I are going to go to Bananas this week find, I got to wear a tux or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They have the greatest stuff there. Oh, you would look so handsome in like a white Great Gatsby tux. You should get something like that. That would look really 1920s.
I'm going to talk to Richard down there, and I know he'll put me, he'll stare me in the right direction. Yeah. Well, it's funny because we were just there a couple, we were there for some other thing that we needed to get an outfit for.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned it.
And I was looking at the, and so they had a whole section of men's tuxes, and they were like $40.
I know people who go to Richards, load up, and bring their stuff, bring it to New York, and sell it for 10 times the amount. I simply don't know how he does it.
I don't either. But like these times, for a prom, it costs you, I remember 10 years ago, it cost $100 to rent a tux.
Just to rent it. You can own one,
right,
Richard.
You're crazy not to. So you may want to check. Let me just double check to make sure that this...
It is a fundraiser for the local branch of Crush Cancer and an Alzheimer's Association or group. Heidi's in the room.
Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
Heidi just walked in.
We're talking about
Mayor Safathia's murder mystery at Cape Ann Brewing.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a good time.
That'll be fun. I did, for several years, I did murder mysteries kind of all over the state.
What was the place in Boston that you did that they did them?
There's a murder mystery cafe. Is that what?
Oh, there was one. It was a funny name, and the reason, this is back when I was at Bentley and I wasn't of legal drinking age, but they never. But it was notorious that they didn't check IDs.
Oh,
so we all
went
there. It was,
what's the name?
Real speakeasy.
There's still a place in Boston that does it.
It might be the same.
Because Jessica, who was one of our apprentices, is the troop manager now. I just talked to her last week. But what I did was actually really fun. I did corporate murder mysteries.
Oh.
So they would have a company party.
Oh, fun.
And I would come in like 2 weeks before the party as a new hire and spend like a morning at the company. And it would be only like the president and one other person would know.
Oh my God, that's wild.
And I would come in as like, I went into an architecture firm, I went into all different, as like this top architect and basically get a promotion above all these other people. And you know,
everybody's freaking out.
I would talk to the president and the people in charge beforehand and find out, and they'd take me into their office, and I'd really, really piss people off. It was so much fun because you could say anything, like everything that you would not say in a real work situation. And then it would be the party, and I would be there, and they'd introduce me, and then I'd die. I'd die at some point in the evening, and then the whole thing was to figure out who killed me.
Yeah.
And they'd have medics come in. They'd have, like, guys dressed as medics and take me out on a stretcher, and then at the end of the night, I'd come in and be like, hey, I'm an actress. And for months afterwards, I think even a year after, people would see me at the mall or I'd see people in Boston, and they'd be like, oh my God, you're that witch.
Oh my
but
God.
Not witch. That came into my company. I can't believe it. And so it's really fun, and it gets people together, mm-hmm. and And that was really fun.
We used to have an event at the high school library during National Library Month, the Great Read Aloud. We called it the Read Aloud. And every year I had a different theme for it. And one year we did a murder mystery based on The Wizard of Oz. So the whole school was involved, and we had, you know, yellow brick road through the halls, and we had a kid picked up. Oh, it was. It was very, very popular. And the kids, you know, in the audience that were able to be there tried to guess who had done it.
What a great idea. It was a lot of fun.
We just wrote 10-minute plays. Youth Acting Workshop Winter Session ended on Saturday. And the kids all wrote 10-minute plays. Then they built props, learned about props and built props for them, then designed sets and lights for them. And Saturday we performed them. And the one that was really the older kids, a group of the older kids wrote a play. It was a murder mystery. Everything's murder mystery. And Emily Grace, one of my students, they had to come up with better names. That was a challenge. After they wrote it, I'm like, better names, A House Divided. Because, of course, everybody was going after each other. And the kids had such a ball with it. And they want to adapt it into a full-length play. Three kids wrote it, but then when we were doing it, I'm like, oh, let's do it last. And I said, I want to direct every kid from the class in it, so everybody dies at a certain point. It was really funny. That'll be fun. I'm surprised it's probably sold out. It's not sold out.
According to the ticket agency here, Eventbrite. Yeah, sold out.
Yeah.
I don't know if they take waiting lists in case.
Do we know who's dying? We don't know who's dying.
We don't.
I don't know anything about it. Ralph told me I was going. So.
Oh.
Yeah. You will receive your role in the play and join in the festivities.
Oh. Wait, really?
Yeah, that's what they do.
I'm probably, you know what? Every play I've ever been in, I was like the tree. Because you couldn't hide me, because my voice was so terrible. Usually in high school things, it's musicals and stuff.
Right.
And back when I was in, you know, mm-hmm. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dream, I was always...
Which is all sung.
The furthest place that they could put me away from...
Sad.
From, like, having to be noticed, that's where they would put me. I know my limits, and this was something I had fun, and I loved doing it. I did it for a couple of them because it was really a great way to meet girls.
Guys don't understand that.
It's the best. There is so much especially, you know, if you're not a jock, you have to find other ways, right? So it's really the theater, there's a lot of tension.
Yeah,
I don't want to say sexual tension because you're a teenager, but like,
well,
you know, your hormones, like,
yeah.
The young girls coming into their own, young boys coming into their own, and you're acting with them and spending a lot of time. So a certain amount of people are up on stage kind of like doing their part, and you're like, you know, hanging out up back, like, you know, not, you know,
it's
whatever.
A shared experience.
That's why we have chaperones there, yes. That's why parents monitor backstage. Well, the other thing is that it's, you know, boys and girls working together at a common goal. Like, there's boys on there's the boys football team, the boys hockey team, the boys soccer team. So the boys work together, and then the girls soccer team and this and that. And so... The only interaction, it's part of the reason why I want to go to a co-ed college and not an all-girls school, the only interaction you have if you're not working with them on a project is dating, awkward, you know, relationship, learning about, all that kind of stuff. Whereas in theater, boys and girls are together. You're in the same play.
Like their music program.
You're in the mm-hmm. same pro. You're do working together,
Tortoise
and you
Chronicle.
Learn how to interact on a normal level.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
That's exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, and then there was always There was always after the play, they had the party.
The party after that last thing.
I mean, and y'all, everybody's charged up. I mean, everybody is, like you are, because you're going to go on stage in front of all these people, like, and we're all working together, and you know what I mean? It's just this.
Yes,
I mean,
wonderful energy.
Yes, energy, yes, that type of energy.
Yeah.
For the party, because the party's like kind of like
yep.
not at school, whatever, you know.
Yep. And now it is, now they have text groups, and where they all text each other all the time, and my kids all have a group of the older kids have a New Year's Eve get together, and they all go to someone's house on New Year's Eve, and
I think it gives them I think it gives sort of these typically the jocks are the cool kids, right? I think it gives these maybe not jock kids a total self-confidence. I see a lot of these kids, you see them on the street and they may not be look like what that you would think is the cool kids or anything, but they're very self-confident. Yeah. Like, there's people that I know.
Yeah. Jim and I directed the school play for a lot of years, and we would, you know, those are the kinds of kids that would primarily come out, but I would always try to get a jock, a musician, you know, to help bring the audience and other kids into it as well.
Well, and the other thing, those kids, I mean, what I found, because, you know, when I was in high school and when I was in college, I was the kid that did the arts. I never did sports. I was not. And the jock, when I was in college, I lived in the jock house. And
really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Heidi.
It was no.
Yeah.
No, it was.
Did they bring you in for the?
There.
Yeah.
Are you a part of the recruiting process?
Yes. No, you know how we ended up. No, there's upper. You know, everyone lives in Harvard Yard freshman year, and then you apply. Now it's totally.
Total lottery.
Now it's a total lottery. But when I was there, you would get together with a roommate, and my roommate was Chinese. And you pick the house. You have your top three choices. And then somehow, some people get their top choice. Some people don't get them. Some people get quadded.
So Lori Loughlin, you buy your way to the
house. Right, or if you're a legacy student, right?
Yeah, no, that didn't really. So
legacy students should get
legacies ended up quadded, too. Mm-hmm. So Kirkland House, which is one of the river houses, which was very desirable, we went and... We picked our top three choices. Kirkland was Vivian. I didn't really care where I was as long as I was on the river. I wasn't up at the Radcliffe Quad. And Vivian, my roommate, said that she felt, because we went and they had events you went to, and we ate in the dining hall to see like where we felt most comfortable. And Vivian said that she was most comfortable in Kirkland House. She said she felt that the people were the most welcoming, and she felt like she could go sit in the dining room and sit at any table and somebody would be nice to her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fine with me. I have no problem with that. Kirkland won. And so...
Oh, there you go.
So we got into Kirkland. But I mean, I would... All, you know, my friends were hockey and, you know, all different. My best friend was a swimmer. She was just here yesterday. Was captain of the swim team. And they were endlessly fascinated with, none of them would have the confidence to go up on stage. They would have, and they really admired the fact that, wow, you can get up and do there. And I remember the lacrosse captain one morning, we're having breakfast Saturday morning, and he's like, why are you up so early? I'm like, oh, I have a singing lesson in Boston. And he said, what do you do at a singing lesson? Like, what do you do? Like, what's that?
What is that?
So, you know, it's a...
Yeah, good times for the you don't have to be a jock.
No.
So there's we need to make this announcement for the people that were wondering. The Man at the Wheel statue is in fact
in place as it has always been, as far as I'm aware. Yeah.
So Fathia,
it's not missing.
So Fathia got a query from a tourist. The tourist was very disappointed that they came to Gloucester specifically to see the fisherman statue, but they only saw the fisherman's wife statue, and they were dismayed that the fisherman's statue wasn't there anymore.
And there was no news anywhere about where was the fisherman's statue.
Oh, did they not make it over the bridge? Was
apparently,
that
it must be.
It has to be. That's the only explanation. But I thought it's hilarious that Safati shared that with
me. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Although they were working on it yesterday. I was surprised. It was a Sunday, and they were working on the bridge yesterday.
They're working nonstop to try to get it.
Yeah, because it's down all
that
the time.
That probably did throw off their perception
that'll,
where they were.
That'll really screw up the fishermen.
they might have thought they couldn't go over the bridge because they were working on it, maybe. Oh, gosh.
Pat, I need my Adventure Man update.
Adventure Man update, less than 10 days till his expected arrival on Wednesday, March 27th. We are trying to organize a reception for him. And we are waiting to hear what his route in will be. We think we know, but we're not sure. And the actual welcoming event as he arrives and finishes is going to be dependent on where he comes into town.
Okay.
Hopefully at the Statue of Pavilion Beach. It could be at Stageport Park. We're not really sure yet. There's a couple of other options on the table. We are still looking for people who would like to run and kind of escort him into town. And as soon as we know what the route is again, then we'll be able to tell interested runners.
Have you got a group of runners?
I do have a contact with Nan Gorton, who has a group of runners, and she's going to see, you know, what people can do. I know it's a weekday, and I don't know what time of day it will be.
Right. Where is he right now? What time is he in right now?
Connecticut.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah, I know. It feels really close, doesn't it?
Like Virginia did not feel close.
It does feel very close. And we're also looking for some host families for some of the people that are coming in, friends and family that are coming.
Oh, they're
from
still looking for host families?
Yeah.
Really?
We've got one, I believe, but we still are looking for some host families.
Hmm.
So
if it's a Monday.
It's a Wednesday.
Oh, it's a Wednesday?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know when, I don't know when these people are coming. I don't know the details of their travel either. So, you know, that's another. But it would be a couple nights in the range of the 27th. And hopefully we'll be able to host a party,
for
everybody to meet him and welcome him.
Totally.
From Gloucester. So we're very excited.
But Cruise Port would be a good place to do that, wouldn't it?
That's a good idea.
No. Yeah, it's just too big.
I don't want to say anything, but think about this. I understand you say Cruiseport, right? Think about him coming through Magnolia.
Right.
Pat, the man at the wheel.
Yeah.
Coming down the boulevard with a bunch of runners behind him.
Yeah.
Visually, does that not speak to you?
Yeah.
Or are you looking at me dead-eyed? Like, that doesn't make
it.
Yeah. And then going down, because his whole idea, if you've been following him, was that he dipped his toes in the Pacific Ocean, at the beach. He keeps speaking about wanting to dipping his feet in the Atlantic Ocean at the end of his stop. That's what he's making, Gloucester.
Yeah.
So going down, imagine him coming through Magnolia, down the boulevard with a bunch of Gloucester runners behind him.
Right.
And people green.
Photo op there, big banner, says Adventure Man on it. Welcome Adventure Man, congratulations.
Right.
Go down Fort Square, down Pavilion Beach, to the Atlantic Ocean and Pavilion Beach. Dip his feet
right
up to Beauport, where the big deck is, where you could host a big party outdoors. It wouldn't interfere with their business so much, but there'd be a nice reception there. In my head,
That's what you see. Yeah.
That's
what I envision. I mean, I have not spoken to anyone. I shouldn't even speak. I'm not speaking for any of these people. But I think that would be really cool.
We are waiting on some additional details from his team. I have invited him to come to the podcast while he's here and send him a number of links so that he can listen to it and see what it sounds like. And I'm hoping that he'll have the time to do that. So
you know what I'm going to do? You know how I make those little clips?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me see. 54. We probably started talking about this at minute 51.
Okay.
I'll try to make a note. And I will make a little clip. You can send him the little clip so he doesn't have to listen to the whole podcast.
That's a great idea.
Clip.
Although I think he has time 51. On the road when he's...
I get it. I don't know if he has earbuds in or something.
Yeah.
But maybe. So Adventure Man, let's do this.
Yep.
Big.
10 days, yeah.
10 days.
9 days.
I talked to Pixie Harrington yesterday, whose husband, Bob Gillis, is very involved in that Gloucester Runners Club.
Oh, okay.
So I mentioned it to her.
Oh,
I don't
good,
know if she'll
good.
Remember because it was the mayhem at the crow's nest of St. Patrick's Day.
There's so many people running on the road, I want to hand them out cards, you know, and say, here, you know, just as they're going down the...
I know. There's got to be Facebook groups that have the Gloucester Runners Clubs.
You know, there probably are. I have looked. I have asked.
Have you reached out to Muffy White by chance? No.
I don't know who that is.
Muffy runs everywhere, and she's a runner, and she is a
Well, Pixie is really good, too, because I see her running.
Pixie is trying to do a marathon in every state in the country.
Oh, yeah. Wow,
and she's,
that's
Pixie,
great.
Everybody knows.
She's retired, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I'll see if I can get a hold of Pixie right now.
To remind her.
Yeah.
Because I see her when I walk, I see her on the back shore with... She'll have like 3, 4, 5 women, and they're all running.
And we're also going to want people along.
Can you see this Team
too?
Gloucester? This is the shirt that they all wear. This is Bob Gillis.
Okay.
I'm sorry for the podcast.
That's all right.
People,
yeah.
I'm speaking to something that's on my screen.
Bob Gillis. We love Bob Gillis. Cape Ann Savings Bank.
I often see Bob and Pixie at Good Harbor Beach cleaning up early in the morning.
Right. Oh, they're part of that group. They do the 1 hour at a time group
gang,
So there's that. Okay, so.
And people out to greet on the streets as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Be looking for that.
Right now is the International Boston Seafood Show.
Oh, it's now?
It's happening right now. It started yesterday.
Oh, okay.
It's today and ends tomorrow. Mark Ring is there. Our friend Sal DiStefano that's been on the podcast a bunch of times. Sapathy is there today.
Yeah.
As a business, Gloucester allows me to go in under their
umbrella.
Their umbrella to be able to get into the show. And I was going to go there. I wanted to do a podcast from there today, but I have boats fishing, so I can't get in. It always is this time of year.
Yeah.
It's always right around St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
I didn't want to go in yesterday because it's St. Patrick's Day. And it looks like I'm going to have boats out fishing tomorrow, so I'm not going to be able to get in. But anyway, I got in contact with Sal DiStefano. I'm like, Sal, how do I get my tickets for the show? I'd love to do a podcast from there. He goes, well, you should come in Monday because the governor's going to be there on Monday. And in my head, I'm like, well, if the governor's going to be there, and I don't have any problem with the governor. I think he's a good guy and everything. But whatever. It has nothing to do with the governor.
No,
who I have a problem with? The people that get excited that want to be there to glom on to the governor. Like, those are the people I really don't want to be around. Like, the people that, like, get all horny because they want to get in the guy's ear that they think they're going to have an impact because the governor's there. So they're going to, like... Yeah, and so that should make me excited to go there because the governor's going to be there. All I could think about was... Oh, that's great to know because I'd rather go another time.
Day.
And again, it has nothing to do with
crazy.
Not liking the governor at all. It's the people that glom on to politicians like they're rock stars and think that they're going to be super important to this person because they shook their hand or something. Anyway, yeah. We mention this all the time. I feel like it bears repeating that the Sapathia, Sal DiStefano, Mark Ring, that whole team, they do a great job promoting Gloucester. Mark was telling me something this morning. He picked up a big lobster to bring in that he was bringing into the show for the display, the Gloucester display.
Yeah.
That they have one of the aisles in this big expo center is called Mass Ave, and it's all the
Massachusetts
Seafood Company.
Oh,
because
there's hundreds and hundreds of companies that display here. It's really an international show. People come from all over the world.
Wow.
For us. It is not like the amount of local displays there. There are some, but it's really an international show. There's people from all over the world that come for this thing.
Yeah.
I think
a couple of years ago, I remember when they brought like busloads of people from Iceland and
Japan. A tour of the Gloucester facilities.
Right.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It was remarkable.
Pat, I'm very excited because Pat got the little camera that I've been using to do time lapse.
Yes.
She posted her first time lapse yesterday.
I did. I
And I went down to the beach to do one, I don't know, maybe it was Saturday. That was a big fail. But, yeah. But I'm experimenting with
it. It's easier if you have the
Wi-Fi
because you can control it from your phone. If you're at the beach, you don't have Wi-Fi to use, do you?
Well, there's Wi-Fi right in the camera, so they connect. I was going to ask you about that anyhow, but...
If you don't have a Wi-Fi connection, you can still run
things?
Connect
to the camera.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought that was its only option, because when I set up the camera, it didn't give me an option to connect to my own Wi-Fi.
Interesting. I didn't know that you could do this. I've always been limited. I've always been like, oh, I can't do what I wanted to do because I don't like the because it's only a $60 camera.
Yeah.
It can do a lot.
It's really cute. It's like as big as a matchbox.
Yeah.
It has all these, the functions are already, the time-lapse functions are already built in, so you don't have to go and post
it. It's smaller and lighter than this tape measure, this
25-yard
tape measure here.
Very cool. I'm glad you got it. You're going to have a lot of fun with it.
I'm getting
for $60, you're going to get your entertainment out of that.
Absolutely.
There's no question. And you can do like little experiments like I did with the seagull. Though. I did
one experiment with birds at the feeder, and everything was going so fast that I was like, no.
Well, you should do the slow motion feature if everything's going so fast.
Oh, yeah. That's
no, it'll be super cool. If you have a flurry of activity at a thing there, you put it at... 120 frames per second.
That's a great idea.
And you do slow motion.
It looks beautiful.
It's going to look ridiculously gorgeous. That's your next assignment.
Okay, very good.
Because that's going to be like one of the more popular things. Yeah. People are going to love that. Trust me on that. Kim, you went to Mexico. You just got back. I got back from Paris. You got back from Mexico.
We had to go a week earlier because the butterflies were really on the move. So.
Because Pat and I did a podcast, and I was like, oh, well, Kim's not even here, and I didn't realize that you were leaving, but while I was in Paris, you must have just made that split decision to go.
We did, and we stayed at a wonderful bed and breakfast. They were super accommodating. I did an interview with them on the roof of their hotel, so as soon as St. Joseph is over, I can start posting some things from there, but also I'm in a mad rush to... get all the new footage to the editors that I'm working with in Boston. So that's a big, huge thing going on right now. But
Are they editing your film?
No, they're...
Color correcting? Or what?
Color correcting. But now I have to... See, I've been able to work on my film all by myself, but now it's there, so I can't just pop these clips in.
Right.
The new clips. Yeah. I have to do everything for them.
Do they have workstations there that you use, or do you bring your own computer in?
They have my whole project there. They have the whole project there on their computer.
Okay, to work on it, whose computer are you using to work on it?
On their computer.
So
they have a bunch of computers. It's called Modulus Studio. That's the people that I'm working with, and they're very well known for being film finishers.
Uh-huh.
So we went to a very, very remote location, climbed 10,000 feet, we got to one location, and they cut a new virgin path for us to go another 1,000 feet, and we perched on this rocky precipice overlooking the migration unfolding below us. So we had drones aren't allowed anywhere in any of these
sanctuaries. That'd be very dangerous.
Yeah.
Butterflies.
Drones, I mean.
So a couple of butterflies going to take out.
Many butterflies.
There's a bazillion butterflies. You're worried about two or three butterflies that are going to get chopped up.
No, it's not that. It's that they scare them, and they make them millions of, if a drone flies close to the butterflies, it can make 100,000 butterflies leave where they are. It's very, very disturbing. To them. So anyway, so we had I got drone type footage at the top of the mountain.
Looking down.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it was really fantastic.
Did you feel safe the whole time you were in Mexico?
Oh my God, I couldn't have felt safer. We were in this town.
So this is the thing. I mean, it's a recurring thing. It was a loaded question. I mean, I hadn't asked you that ahead of time.
No.
But
it was
the same people that tell me that the French people hate us Americans. The people that tell you that you don't go to Mexico because you're going to get murdered in Mexico. The people are the sweetest people you'd
ever meet. Right, the sweetest people you'd ever want to meet. 300 people in this town we were at. The population, 300. horses 100. Mancheros mean stables, and the tiny town was at one point the stables for the haciendas in the area. And so this Joel and Ellen, a Mexican-American couple, started this bed and breakfast about 5 years ago. And they've also started a nonprofit called Butterflies and Their People.
Oh.
And they hire 4 to 6 arborists every year to be paid for through their nonprofit to help monitor the forest. Because when nobody's there, in the months when nobody's there, that's when all the illegal logging and things like that takes place. It's just a tremendous young couple. They've built this beautiful bed and breakfast. Started with 3 rooms, now it's 14 rooms. God. They're building a lodge, a swimming pool. I mean, it's just it's just beautiful.
Monarch Industry.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to say, how did you find out about it? But I think I can figure that out. Were you afraid being on the precipice looking down? Were you strapped in? Yeah. That's where I would have been.
My knees would have been shaking.
It was very scary. Like, for me, it was very scary because I'm not a horse. You have to ride a horse up about the 10,000 feet mark, and the horses are going. Each person has their own horse and their own guide. Because the horses are going up inclines like this with rocky pebbles, and the horses are slipping.
Oh, my God.
No chance of me going.
And the last 1,000 feet, you're walking like in woods. It's very densely wooded. And by the time I got to the rock, my legs buckled. Ooh. You know what I mean? So I was trying so hard to hold the camera super steady.
I'm much safer on the second level of the Eiffel Tower looking down. Yeah. And I was trying to hold the camera with one hand to get up above, because there was a pressure in front of me. I wanted to call it, and my knees were shaking. And you try, the whole thing with photography is keeping still.
Right.
You
know,
steady. So, like, you're in, like a lot of people who were there had already been in Mexico City for a couple of weeks, which is like an altitude already of 3,000 or 4,000. You know what I mean? This was the very first day we got there.
I was totally dehydrated.
Do you use any breathing exercises to slow your heart rate down?
Times I would do like 3 deep breaths. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because
there's tricks that you can do.
It's really hard.
Still,
your heart is pounding. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like. But by the 4th or 5th day, you start getting used to the altitude, but then you leave. Then we left. But there were kids riding the horse. I mean, the kids were the most fearless. And one little kid fell asleep on the horse. Going down is almost as scary because your horse is kind of sliding.
Yeah.
And you're like this. Oh. It's like a 2-hour horse.
You're leaning back. Yeah.
You're leaning back. It's 2 hours up. And then, you know, you only stay for like an hour.
You're on a horse for 2 hours? How is your butt kill?
Yeah. Oh. If you're not used to it.
Do you just that once? Or did you do
thighs,
it a couple times?
What muscles hurt?
Like for me.
Your hamstrings?
Sore.
Yeah.
But then this from gripping.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ellen warned us. She said, now, don't grip the saddle so tightly that you're going to get, blisters. Well, I was one of those.
Of course.
After like 2 hours, you do start to grip because you're just getting, you feel your body just getting really tired. But it was just an extraordinary experience. And I would recommend anybody doing it. Mm. But I would do it when I'm sure I'm going to do it again. I would do a little horseback riding first.
That's a good tip. That's a very good tip.
Yeah, God.
Yeah, I'll put, because there were, I would be at a mountain stream, very quietly early in the morning, and there'd be coyotes coming to the stream to drink, and there's bobcats, and, you know, all kinds
coyotes,
of.
Coyotes, just like Gloucester.
Yeah.
You can walk around.
But they look very different. You know why?
Because did you have a gun with you?
Mm-hmm.
did your guide have a gun with you?
No. Well, this was when I was alone. So
you walking and hanging out with coyotes
and bobcats.
We stayed in a little teeny tiny casita for the first 3 or 4 nights because they squeezed us in, and so the casita was overlooking this beautiful stream and their trout farm. So they have their own trout for the restaurant.
Oh.
So Joel is one of 10 kids, And so the mama runs the restaurant next door. The five sisters work there. All the brothers are trail guides. I mean, it's just a fantastic situation. But the coyotes there, like
industry.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And just, I mean, they're really doing a lot for the community. It's remarkable. But their coyotes look very different because they have a much higher dog DNA. So dogs, chickens, turkeys, they're just all lying around in the street. Horses leave people's yards, trot down the street. You only see like...
Dingo ate your baby!
So the coyotes have a lot of dog DNA in them. And they don't look as wolf-like as ours do. That's why you don't say...
More like German shepherds?
Yeah, that's why you don't say coy wolf, because it's not really a thing. All coyotes have a little bit of something in them.
Do the dogs look more wolf-like? That?
More coyote-like? No.
Or coyote-like?
No,
excuse
because
me.
So about 50 years ago, this kind as coyotes were moving eastward, they bred with a few wolves, they bred with a few dogs, but for the most part, coyotes, now there's more coyotes, so coyotes would rather breed with coyotes. It's not like coyotes are becoming more wolf-like. They'll always have this, mm-hmm. you know, coyote back in their DNA from now, like 50 years ago. So,
cool.
Yeah, it was really.
I'm glad you
cute.
Had a good time.
It was
so, I guess we're gonna start doing this.
Travel log.
No, this. So, when do you think the film would be? What are you guessing? What are you guessing
is,
now?
My goal is April.
Oh, still good.
Wow.
Good.
April's next month.
Are you kidding?
April's 2 weeks.
Holy crap.
April's in 2 weeks, right?
I'm not booking any. Everybody's like, when can we book that? And I'm not booking anything until it's completely done.
You're smart,
I learned the hard
to.
Way first
yeah.
time around.
Yeah.
And so...
How many ways do you have everything backed up right now?
How many what?
How many different ways do you have everything backed up?
Oh, like...
Two?
Three. Really
great, good.
Like the footage from the trip is now on two hard drives. I'm leaving it on the memory cards.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yep. So that in case anything happens, I have the original on the memory cards.
Excellent.
I don't care if it ties up memory cards. You know what I mean?
Right?
Yeah.
It's worth the
Well, memory's become a lot cheaper now.
Yeah.
It was you know, 5 years ago it wasn't so cheap.
Right. So.
But also are you filming in 4K? What are you filming in?
I am not filming in 4K.
You're not? That's interesting to me.
Why would I ever do that? Like, I have 20 hard drives right now with 4 terabytes on each hard drive. 4K uses 4 times as much memory.
Wow.
And nobody's broadcasting in 4K. People broadcast on TV. They're still broadcasting in 720.
I know.
You know what I mean?
It's such a scam, yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not worth it to me to broadcast, to shoot in anything but 1080. It really isn't.
Yeah.
I mean.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's so funny. You know, and here there's people, these, you know, novice filmmakers that don't, you know, they're killing themselves to buy 4K. That's why when I told you about, the, you know, this little Yi light,
mm-hmm.
right.
I mean, the sensor isn't huge or anything, but it's it shoots 1080.
Right.
And I'm like, for what
we're going to post it,
it's, you know, it's the most efficient thing to manipulate, you know, because it's not so much data that's going to demolish your processor trying to edit it.
So one thing about the Modulus Studios is they will give me a bunch of masters in different formats
cool.
to play at different, you know, because some theaters don't have blue, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? So you just have to be prepared for anything.
Absolutely.
And no, who's broadcasting in 4K? I do not know.
Netflix. If you provide it to them in 4K, there's you know
they
you can pay for a Netflix. You have to pay for the 4K subscription.
You have to
pay extra $3 to $4 per month for the 4K.
Right.
And literally there's I'm not.
How many shows?
There's
are you
not on? A ton of shows that are doing the 4K. But now anything I believe. I could be completely talking out of my ass, but I thought that I heard them say that any of the shows that they are producing going forward, that Netflix is actually doing, is going to be doing, they're doing
in
4K.
Yeah.
So I should look that up, but something to that effect.
Right.
Heidi's here, so we have to talk because we're an hour and 14 minutes into this.
My gosh.
We haven't got to what Heidi came here for. You're here to talk about what?
I'm here to talk about the Cape Ann Symphony.
Uh-huh.
I'm here to talk about some things going on at Gloucester Stage.
Okay.
And I also shout out to the Rockport High School Drama Club. They're in the finals of Drama Fest. They're going into Boston. Wow. It's the first time since 2002.
Wow.
My student emailed my student, Julia Drost. She's an award-winning actress, and she's in the play. And she emailed me. She said, this is the first time. She said, I wasn't even born the last time they were in the finals.
Oh, jeez.
So they're going in, and they're doing a play that they wrote. They're doing an original that they wrote. And leading up to that, Julia got an award. A group of characters got an award in the first round. They got an award.
Cool.
And so yeah, they're going to finals. That's I think this weekend coming up.
Wow.
And it's 3 days in Boston.
Yeah.
So and Julia Drost, she won Best Actress last year in Drama Fest. So I tend to think
so. Rockport Drama, is it?
It's the Rockport Drama Club. Yeah, Rockport High School.
Okay, got it. High school.
Yeah, I guess there's 14 other schools that made it to finals.
And
so what was the name of the award thing? The show.
It's Drama Fest.
Okay, so they made it to Drama Fest.
Yep, the finals of Drama Fest.
Okay.
That's a big thing because it's very, very competitive.
Yes.
And you're competing against very
is
well-to-do
statewide?
Schools.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, statewide. Okay. It's very competitive.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't been in the finals since 2002, so it's a real... And they'll perform in Boston. I'm not sure where it is. And they had, I think...
How many
I think it's.
In the
I think it's 14. I think Julia said 14.
Excellent.
So...
Talk about Cape Ann Symphony.
So Cape Ann Symphony, another concert coming up, continuing the 67th season. And it's Sunday, March 24th. This particular concert, only one performance, so get your tickets. And it's only in Manchester for this performance. So Sunday afternoon, March 24th, 2 p.m. at the Manchester High School. No worries about parking. No worries about anything. It's got a great parking lot. You don't have to pay for parking like the BSO or anything. And you're going to get to see a BSO performer, Jonathan Bass, who is a world-renowned pianist, played at Carnegie Hall, appears with the BSO and the Boston Pops regularly. Now he's going to appear with Cape Ann Symphony.
Did you post about it?
Yes.
Okay, so I can look up. I can look that. Yeah,
you can connect
up.
It to that. Yeah. Okay.
And there's all.
I posted before the trip, so I'm pretty sure that's what I posted.
Oh, I'll be able to find it if I type in Symphony. Okay.
And there's also a local connection, because Robert Bradshaw, who is a local composer, he lives around the corner. We
the one that threatens to come on the podcast every time and doesn't come.
Is that guy
talking about?
Well, he's got to write music for the entire world. You know, it's very so. Rob, we are doing a piece that he wrote called Norman's Woe, which is inspired by the wreck of the Hesperus and inspired by Rob living in Gloucester. And the symphony premiered it a few years ago. And then Yoichi really thought it would be kind of a good piece to go in because we're doing Mozart and Beethoven. And he thought Bradshaw would be a good addition to the program. But with each concert, something you might not know, the orchestra is a different size depending on how many musicians they need. And when they first debuted Norman's Woe, it was a much larger orchestra they were using for that concert. So Rob kind of retooled it a little bit. This is a little smaller orchestra.
That's right. Okay.
So he retooled it a little bit. So it's kind of like a mini world premiere. But he was inspired by Gloucester to write it. So
I love the name.
Norman's
Woe.
I know.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And so it's great. And of course, you know, kids can go. The tickets for young people, there's senior citizen tickets are $38. Students, 15, but youth, which is 12 and under, is $5.
Ooh,
where can you go for $5 with your kids?
Right.
Yeah.
And Manchester's a great place to hear a concert.
Yeah.
And Yoichi is endlessly wonderful. So
Yoichi.
Yeah, and you get to see the beautiful grand piano. Jonathan Bass is just amazing. He's going to be doing a Mozart piano concerto. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. And then the symphony has a new program called Musicians Unleashed, which are small chamber concerts, which they've been doing them in January and February while you guys were in Mexico and, you know, and Paris, and you were jetting around. But they have one more coming up in April, which is April 28th, and it's called Spring into Strings. And it's small. It's about six musicians, and they do kind of offbeat things and perform. They're performing at the Crowell Chapel in Manchester. Which I hear is quite lovely and a beautiful place to hear music.
Where is that?
It is on Rosedale Ave, 4 Rosedale Ave.
Oh, okay.
So, Spring into String. So it will be a celebration of strings. And they'll, like they did, the last concert was Bach to the Future, and it was all about Bach then and now and all of that. So that's coming up, and it's all on the Cape Ann Symphony website.
Awesome.
Great.
Well, thanks for coming in, Heidi.
Well, yeah, and Gloucester Stage, Harbor Light Montessori. Shout
Nicole,
out.
That's Nicole's school.
Yeah, Nicole's school.
Oh, what's happening there?
The Harbor Light Montessori is doing an experience week. They have these experience week programs at Harbor Light where the kids go out into the community and learn about, you know, they'll do it in maritime or they'll do it. And they're doing first ever 2-week experience week program at Gloucester Stage. And the kids are learning about professional theater and what it takes to put a show together. And Friday and Saturday, 22nd and 23rd, they are going to be doing a show called the Golden Goose Awards.
Golden Goose Awards.
Which is written by one of their teachers, and Katie Oberlander. And they will be performing at Gloucester Stage as the culmination of their experience week. It's on the Gloucester Stage website, and it's open to the public.
And that's the 22nd, 23rd
yep.
of March.
Of March, yep. Okay. Friday and Saturday. And it's open to the public. And it's a great show for kids, and it'll be all Harbor Light Montessori students performing.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the date.
22nd and 23rd.
Of March?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to send me a link about that? Or do they have like a little poster or flyer?
Yeah, yeah. There is. It's on the Gloucester Stage website, and they have there's a little poster. Mm-hmm. And.
Has Nicole posted anything about that, I wonder?
I don't think I've seen anything.
No. Really? You know, I'm not sure.
Well, she's been away.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the kids, Harbor Light doesn't have school for the 2 weeks, and the kids can opt in to do these experience weeks. Okay. So it was funny, when I was driving down here today, when I stopped, you know, to cross East Main, the Harbor Light Montessori bus went right in front of me.
What's cool about them doing their school vacation off of the time that, like, the local, then the schools, that like, they can actually go places. They can afford to go places because everything else is
right. And there's space for them.
They're trying to afford their space. Yeah.
Awesome. I got a link to the Gloucester Stage website for more information. You can go there. We're at an hour 23. We've got some more topics, but we'll bring them up next time. Thank you guys for coming in. It was an awesome podcast.
Yes,
I missed this. We'll probably do one in a couple days.
Good variety.
Yeah.
Nice.